Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro-Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. It is Wednesday, November 12th, 2008. Another live edition of Wall Street Unspun. Available on my website, www.europac.net, on shortwave radio, 5.07 megahertz, and now in podcast. For those of you who missed the live episodes, we do the show every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Well, another wild, wild week since last we met, last Wednesday. First, just a couple of quick announcements. I, again, will be appearing at the New Orleans Investment Conference on this coming weekend, on Friday, and I'll be there. I'm leaving tomorrow. I think most of my presentations are Friday. I think I might have one on Saturday morning as well. Also, I will be speaking and delivering the keynote address at the San Francisco Hard Assets Conference, coming up at the end of the month. I'm trying to look for the date on that. That is, November 30th through December 1st, a San Francisco Hard Assets Conference. You know, I made my first appearance today on the Lou Dobbs Show on CNN, Lou Dobbs Tonight. Unfortunately, I did a very long interview. They filmed me for about 10 minutes, asked a lot of good questions. I gave a lot of very good answers. Unfortunately, they used one line out of the entire interview, and so it really didn't convey a lot of what I was hoping to get out there. But on a positive note, I've been trying to get on Lou Dobbs for some time now, and they just never put me on. So at least, they put me on now, so they know me, and hopefully I'll be on his show again and maybe get to have more time on the show. If, well, those of you who are listening to this, John Brown is on CNBC. In fact, I was going to could have been on, but I couldn't because I'm doing the show. But John Brown is going to be appearing on CNBC right now, simultaneous to this broadcast. He's on, so I don't, some people might not be able to see him if you're listening to this, but you might be able to quickly set your DVD recorder to CNBC Special Reports, which is where John Brown is going to be appearing. Anyway, a lot of stuff has been happening over the past week. I mean, it gets crazier and crazier every single day based on what these guys are doing. Oh, and the number to call, taking your calls live, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. It really appears to me, though, that the worst-case scenario that I outlined in Crash Proof is actually, unfortunately, becoming the most likely scenario. I think we are headed for a massive, massive collapse of our currency, massive inflation on an enormous scale. I don't think the dollar is going to lose 50% of its value, which is something that I thought was kind of a best-case scenario. In Crash Proof, I talk about the dollar index going down to 40. I mean, right now it's at around 88, up from a low of about 72. I now expect the dollar index to maybe go to between 10 and 20, maybe even below 10. I think it is going to be a cataclysmic decline in the value of the dollar. And I think it's extremely important that people bear that in mind when they are looking at their current accounts and worrying that the dollar value has declined. I think this is all meaningless. I think these accounts, you can add zeros to your accounts, and I think that's where they're likely to be, adding maybe even more than one zero as far as what the value is going to be at the end of the Obama term. But this is a complete unmitigated disaster. I mean, the disaster is not the economic collapse. I mean, we knew this was coming. I knew this phony economy was going to fall apart. The disaster is what the government is doing to trying to prop it up. That is what I was afraid was going to happen. And, of course, my worst nightmares have been confirmed, and this country's fate has been sealed. sealed, this is going to be a complete economic wasteland. My now concerns are going to be for the country as a society, as a place to live. That is my real concern now, what is going to happen. The economy is going to be decimated. The currency is going to be destroyed. But there are more important things to worry about as an American citizen now, what is going to happen to our country. But to go over some of the things that have happened, first of all, you've got the government is getting ready to bail out Chrysler and General Motors and all these auto industry companies that are about to go bankrupt. Of course, I was on CNBC, I think on Friday, very good interview on their special reports talking about why we don't need these bailouts, why the government should let these companies fail. There is no reason to prop these companies up. They've been losing billions of dollars. General Motors was losing money as a company 2 years ago when auto sales were at record highs. So if they couldn't make money in the biggest car market ever, with car sales at their highest pace ever, they couldn't make money during the best of times. Why is the government going to spend billions of dollars to prop them up? So they can continue to lose money? Right now, Barack Obama is talking about appointing a car czar, right, to a new cabinet post. The auto industry is going to become a government program, like the post office, and it's going to cost us tens of billions of dollars a year to subsidize cars. And, of course, if you thought General Motors was making bad cars now, wait till you see how bad they're going to be when the government is in charge of designing these cars. That's what's going to happen. And why does the government want to prop them up? They want to prop up the inefficient, overpaid executives and the UAW workers and the retired GM workers who have bled this company dry. These are overpaid workers. These companies need to fail. They should fail. We need to allow people that know what they're doing to pick up the pieces and buy up these plants and employ these workers at competitive wages. We can have an automobile industry in the United States if we let this inefficient automobile industry go bankrupt. But, of course, the government's not going to do that. The government's going to prop it up, and we're just going to pour more and more money down this rat hole, and we're never going to make any cars in this country except the ones that are being made by foreign companies that have efficient plants in the United States, which obviously proves that we can make cars in the United States. We just need other people running the companies, and we need, you know, we got to get out from under these pension obligations and these legacy costs and these union contracts. But, of course, that's not going to happen. What else did we get this week? We got the bankruptcy of Circuit City. Now, I've been predicting that Circuit City would go bankrupt for years. So they're broke. Also, today, you had Best Buy, the country's biggest seller of electronics. They announced a collapse in earnings. They said this is a seismic shift in consumer spending, and they're shocked. Well, this is exactly what I wrote was going to happen in my books. And obviously, America is broke, so our phony economy is coming to an end. And the phony economy is, you know, you have all these big stores like Best Buy and Circuit City that sell products that we didn't make. We import them from the rest of the world. They're underpriced because of the overvalued U.S. dollar. And then we sell those products to American consumers who use plastic, who use credit cards to buy these products. So the products come in from abroad, and then they loan us the money to buy it. And this thing, whole economy is falling apart. So consumers are going to stop spending because they can't borrow anymore. We're broke. We never should have been spending all this money in the first place. And unfortunately, this ridiculous economy evolved around this relationship of foreigners lending us goods and loaning us money. And we have all these shopping centers and all this whole service economy is phony. And we've got more retail square footage per capita in this country than any place else in the world, except all the retail stores are filled with products that we didn't make and we can't afford. So this whole structure is going to collapse, and more companies, just like Circuit City, are going to go bankrupt. You know, Best Buy might go bankrupt too. But the companies that don't go bankrupt, they're going to downsize. Most companies like Best Buy, 4 years from now, if they're still in business, more than half their stores will have been closed. These companies are going to have to shrink. They're going to have to get a lot smaller. They're going to have to cut capacity. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to raise prices. And what they're going to do is they're going to try to restore profitability by selling far fewer products at much, much higher prices. And that's what's going to happen because this mass merchandising is gone because Americans are broke. And we have to recognize this. And I think it's very interesting because Paulson today, and of course, I don't know how this guy can have his job. I mean, he is basically, all he does is lie, right? He lied to Congress about the bailout of Freddie and Fannie when he said, look, just give me this bazooka. It's going to be in my pocket. I'll never have to use it. And then immediately, the first chance he got, he emptied that thing. He fired it right away. Then he went to Congress and said, we need this bailout. We need this $700 billion. We have to buy up these troubled assets. We need to do this. We have to do this. If we don't do it, it's going to be Armageddon. It's going to be a Great Depression. It's going to be martial law, all this stuff that they said. Now, Paulson just fessed up and said, we're not going to do any of that. We're not going to use any of this $700 billion to buy troubled assets. Well, of course, this is total bait and switch, right? And I was one of the only people that understood this because I said from the beginning, and if you don't believe me, look at my commentary, that the whole thing was impossible. They were going to buy these assets off these banks, they said, at their market value. I said that was impossible because if they paid the market value, they would bankrupt all the institutions they were trying to bail out. I said the only way to make it work is if they come in and overpay for the assets. And I guess they realized they didn't have enough money to overpay for all these assets, so they scuttled the whole deal. But instead of giving the money back, instead of not spending the money, you know, Paulson is doing other things with the money. He's using it to buy stock in all these banks. You know, they're going to use it to bail out the auto companies, it looks like. Now Paulson announced today they're going to use the money to bail out the credit card companies. Oh, by the way, that's another thing that I predicted that was going to come, the collapse of credit card lending, auto lending, student loans. And guess what? American Express, the credit card company, has decided to become a bank. Why is it becoming a bank? So we can get more money from Paulson, more money out of the TARP. That is the new biggest government giveaway bonanza, is to become a bank and get billions and billions of dollars, no questions asked. But this whole thing is falling apart, and these clowns are destroying this country. And what did they come out with today? What asinine program did Freddie and Fannie come out with, or yesterday? These guys are now have a new program. All right, get this. All right. And anybody who's got a mortgage, if you know you got a mortgage with Freddie and Fannie, just stop paying. I mean, you're good to go on this one. Here's what the government said: the government is going to, if you stop, first of all, you got to stop paying your mortgage. So in order to get this government freebie, you got to immediately stop paying your mortgage and don't make any payments at all for the next 90 days. So you got to skip three mortgage payments. So start right away. So you skip three payments, and here's what the government's going to do. But you got to make sure that your mortgage is owned or insured by Freddie and Fannie. If it's not, then you can't participate in this giveaway. You'll probably got another one coming down the pipe. But here's what you do. You stop making your mortgage payments, and the government is going to call you up. And they're going to give you a brand new mortgage. And this mortgage is going to be for no more than 38% of your household income. But not the mortgage, right? They're going to make sure that your entire house expenditures, which includes your mortgage, your taxes, your condo fees, your homeowner's fees, all the your monthly costs for home ownership, they're going to make sure that those costs are no more than 38% of your monthly income. So if right now your mortgage is 40% of your monthly income or 50% of your monthly income, then if you stop making your payments, the government is going to immediately give you a much lower mortgage. They're going to lower the payments by either extending the maturity to 40 years, by lowering the interest rates, or making it a negatively amortized loan where the missed principal will be added to the balance at the end of the loan. But of course, the government is making a big deal about the fact that there's no principal forgiveness. They're not letting people off the hook on their principal. Well, big deal. If they're going to cut your mortgage payment in half, you know, that's just as well. I mean, but the only thing is that the reason that the government is not allowing the principal to be reduced is because they don't want you to sell your house. Because if they reduce the value of the mortgage, you can turn around and sell the house and maybe make a profit. The government doesn't want these houses on the market. So they want to create a situation where you live in the house for very cheap, but you can't sell it. But of course, what the government forgot is that you can't sell it, but you can put it on the rental market. And so while they might succeed in keeping these houses off the for sale market, they will be on the rental market, and a glut of rental properties will also suppress home prices, because who's going to buy a house if you can rent one? And here's the kicker, and here's the real moral hazard. See, the government has enacted this policy to help the people who are now struggling with their mortgage. But the minute the government has enacted this, everybody is going to try to get on the bonanza. And here's what I'm thinking. And this is, you know, let's assume you've got a two-income household that's kind of typical, where maybe let's say the husband is making $50,000 a year, and maybe his wife is making $30,000 a year. They got a couple of kids, and while the wife is working, you know, the kids are in daycare, and of course there's all kinds of work-related expenses in addition to child care. And let's say their mortgage right now represents 40% of their salary, their combined household income. Well, here's what can happen now with this new plan. Let's say the wife quits her job, and now they're not earning $80,000 a year anymore. They're only earning $50,000 a year. Now that the wife has quit her job, now their mortgage payment might be 60 or 70% of their husband's income. Now the government is going to reduce it so that the mortgage is now only 38% of the husband's income, because the wife decided to quit working, and now, of course, they eliminate the child care expenses and she can stay at home with the children, which makes a lot of sense, because what will probably happen is the amount by which the mortgage is reduced will probably exceed the after-tax income of the spouse who quit her job. And this is what's going to happen. In fact, a lot of people might decide to quit their job altogether and say, you know what, I'm making $40,000 a year. If I quit my job and I get a part-time job at minimum wage at McDonald's and stop making my mortgage payments, and then the government calls me up, they're going to give me a mortgage where my mortgage payment doesn't exceed 38% of my minimum wage job. So people might be able to take a current mortgage payment of $4,000 a month and have it reduced to $300 or $400 a month for the next 40 years by the U.S. government. And, of course, the minute they secure this rock-bottom mortgage rate, then they can go back and get another job at a higher pay, or maybe put it on the rental market, you know, because you're going to have it locked up cheap. This is going to be a huge, huge bonanza. This is going to result in record mortgage delinquencies, as almost everybody who's got a mortgage is going to stop making their payments, because most people who bought homes in the last few years are already paying more than 38% of their total budget on housing. So everybody can stop. But as I said, people will realize that the less they make, the lower their mortgage payments are going to be. So the key is to make as little as possible, at least for now, which means if you have two people working in the household, one person quits. Maybe ask your boss for a pay cut. Or if you work, if you're somebody who works on an hourly basis, just work fewer hours. You know, make sure you work fewer hours for a while, so you can, you know, now you can easily do that because you're not making any mortgage payments, right? The minute you stop making your mortgage payments, you don't have to work as much. You don't need as much money because you don't have to make your mortgage payments. In fact, in many cases, one of the main reasons that you have, you know, both a husband and a wife working is because the second income is needed to pay the mortgage. But the minute you stop making your mortgage payment, then you don't need that second income. And, of course, once you lose the second income, you know, 3 months from now or whenever it is, that you finally have to start making your mortgage payment, it's going to be a much smaller payment because the government's going to reduce your mortgage. But, of course, where is all this money going to come from to do this? I mean, it's all going to go through Fannie and Freddie. This is going to be trillions and trillions of dollars that are going to be wiped off of the assets of Fannie and Freddie, or it's going to be contingency liabilities. This is all, of course, now part of the federal government, because these are assets that were on their books, and maybe they were getting a certain amount of money from these mortgages, and now they're going to get a fraction of that. This is a trillions and trillions of dollars of lost money, which, of course, the government is going to have to print. This is going to be a complete print fest. We are bailing out everybody. You know, what's next? I mean, they're going to be bailing out the airline industry. I hear now there's a lot of pension funds that, of course, are going to be in trouble. I wrote about this in my book, Problems at the Pension Guarantee. You have all these pensions, you have all these annuities, you have all these investment vehicles that were loaded up on stocks that have now collapsed, and pensions are underfunded. Companies now can't afford to make contributions to their pensions because the companies are broke. They need liquidity, but the law requires that they have to put money into their underfunded pensions. Annuities and insurance companies have made promises. It's going to be one financial failure after another, and it's going to create the biggest government in the history of the world that's going to try to solve all these problems, thinking that all they have to do is print money. And it's coming to an end, folks. It's coming to an end. And, you know, I thought it was very interesting in Henry Paulson's speech today, the same speech where he said we have to bail out the credit card industry. He said we need to put money into credit cards, into auto loans, so that Americans can keep borrowing money so we can keep the economy going. The same time he said that, he said that ultimately, he said, we have to address the major underlying imbalances in the global economy, and that is the result of Americans not saving enough money and spending too much money. He actually said that. He said that we have to address those problems in the same speech where he was saying we need to get more money to the credit cards so that Americans can keep using their credit cards and buying stuff. Now, that's the exact opposite of what we need. The reason there's a credit crunch, right, that is not the problem. The credit crunch is the solution. The problem was that Americans borrowed too much money. And the credit crunch is Americans being denied the ability to borrow money to consume. We don't want Americans consuming. We've consumed too much. We don't need to buy anything. The average American, he has a closet full of clothes. He has a house full of gadgets. He's got two cars in his driveway. We don't need to buy anything else. We need to start making money. We need to start saving money. And the free market is trying to do that. The free market is trying to correct these imbalances, and the government is fighting it every step of the way, and we're all going to pay the price. And I think the most interesting bit of news that came out over the last week, and I sent out that email about this yesterday, is the fact that China is launching a $600 billion economic stimulus plan of its own, which in relation to Chinese GDP is absolutely enormous. But my thinking is, and they're going to use this money for infrastructure and things in China, which is great. I think it would be better if they just simply cut checks to the Chinese citizens in the form of tax rebates and sent them their pro rata share of their foreign currency reserves. But what they're going to do is they're going to spend money on infrastructure. The question is, where is that money going to come from? I think it's going to come from their U.S. treasuries. I think China is going to not only not buy more U.S. treasuries, they're going to start unloading the treasury they've got. Treasuries are the one asset that has gone up in value recently. The dollar has had this phony rally. What better opportunity for the Chinese government to start hitting these bids and start unloading their U.S. dollars? Because if they're going to hold on to all their dollars and not use them and continue to buy more of our bonds, and simultaneously try to fund their stimulus, they will destroy their currency and create massive inflation in China. The only way that China can stimulate its economy is to use its foreign exchange reserves and spend those, because right now that money is doing the economy no good. You see, China is in a different position than America to stimulate the economy. We can't do anything here because we're broke. All we can do is print money and create inflation. But China doesn't have to do that. China can sell down its vast holdings of U.S. treasuries and use that money for its economy, put it to good use. So China actually can stimulate the economy because they've been obstructing the economy for all these years by accumulating all these dollars. And if they start spending them now, then the economy will benefit. Now, of course, they would be in much better shape had the Chinese government never accumulated all these dollars and simply allowed the RMB to rise. If they had done that, China's domestic economy would be in much better shape right now, and they would be perfectly able to consume all the goods that they produce. Instead, the transition is going to take a little while longer, but we're going to get there. We are going to get there. But the important thing to remember is everything the government is doing is making the situation worse without exception. The people running this country have no clue what they're doing. They are literally destroying it. It's going to be amazing when they write the history books about this time period. And, you know, if we weren't living through it when we're talking to our grandchildren, nobody is going to believe as a society how completely dumb we were, what we did to ourselves. But all we can do is protect our own wealth right now, and we've got to do that. We've got to understand that what we've done is the right thing, even though the dollar has gone straight up, and even though all stocks around the world are trading at depression era fire sale prices, this will not last. There is no way it can last. As much as the dollar rallied, and this rally has been unprecedented. This is the biggest rally I've ever seen in the dollar in the shortest period of time. As big as the rally is, the collapse is going to be much, much bigger. I think the dollar is going to fall two or three times as fast as it rose, and it's going to fall, and it's going to keep falling into a bottomless pit. I don't think there's any hope left for the dollar, and so that means we have to get rid of them. We have to look at what's happened recently with the dollar in these markets, as an opportunity of a lifetime, as a gift horse, as a blessing in disguise, as a, you know, this is a last chance. And again, I don't know how long it's going to be, right? I mean, obviously the dollar has been rallying now for a few months, and so this fire sale has been going on for a while. We don't know when it's going to shut. We don't know when this window of opportunity is going to slam shut. But when it does, it's going to be slammed shut for good. And you need to go through it while it's open. And, you know, if you've already got all your funds committed, there's not much you can do but ride it out, although you can reinvest your dividends if you don't need them. If you still got more money, you know, I took a call from a gentleman today who was working with one of the reps who was down, I think it was over 50%, I think, on the initial 100 grand he had sent us. He came in towards the highs. But he told me he still had another, you know, $500,000 or $600,000 that he was planning on investing, and he was, you know, worried, you know, what should I do, because, you know, the initial 100 is down. And I said, look, that's the best thing that could have happened to you, that 100 has gone down. You're only in for a small percentage of what you wanted to buy. I mean, thank your lucky stars that you're able to deploy this other $500,000 at such favorable prices, at such favorable exchange rates. It's better than having the first 100,000 turn into 200,000 and now him having to pay up for all the stocks he wants to buy to get a lousy exchange rate. This is a great opportunity for people who are continuing to put money into the market. Don't worry about the fact that the stocks that you already bought are now down. It doesn't matter. Pay attention to the valuations that you get on the new money that you're investing. That's what you want. As long as you're buying stocks, you want them to go down. If you're still accumulating stocks, you always want to buy cheaper. You never want to buy higher. The only time you want prices to go up is when you're thinking of selling. Then, of course, you need higher prices. But when your plan is to buy, when you're accumulating stocks, you hope they go down. Even the stocks that you already own, you hope they go down, because that's the way you can buy more cheaper. And that's happening. And so people have to remember to take advantage of it. I am confident that the people who are upset now because they invested 6 months ago, a year ago, and they're upset because they could have waited and got a better buy now, believe me, I think there's going to be a lot more people who are a lot more angry, a couple of years from now, when they look at where these stocks are and they look at where they could have bought them, and they're going to say, oh my God, look at how much money I could have had if I had only taken advantage of that opportunity. What an idiot I was. A lot of people are going to be saying that. I'm sure I'm going to be saying that, because I'm probably going to be kicking myself because I didn't buy even more than I bought. But anyway, let me quickly go to the phones. We got Jim on the line from California. Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, hey, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a comment and a couple of questions. So first off, I agree with you completely about what's happening in China. I was there back in November, and the economy didn't seem to be slowing down to me. I was in Shanghai. It was astonishing. I mean, it looked like they were building New York from scratch. I actually think that this stimulus package is an excuse for them to start unloading our treasuries. And if that's the case, what's going to happen when the U.S. Treasury has to start doing their auctions the next couple months?
Well, this is the biggest problem, because China's been the biggest buyer of U.S. Treasuries. And if they go from buyer to seller, because obviously if they're going to start financing their stimulus, and selling treasuries, they can't buy treasuries. They're going to be a net seller. So, that means not only are we going to be selling a record amount of treasuries, but China, that used to buy treasuries, is going to be selling treasuries too. This whole thing is going to collapse. The bond market is going to collapse. The only buyer for the treasuries is going to be the Federal Reserve. And so we're going to be monetizing our stimulus. We're going to be monitoring the Chinese stimulus. I mean, everybody around the world who wants to stimulate their economy, the way they should do it is by spending all the dollars that they're hoarding. And the dollars are going to crash. There's just no way around it.
Well, Peter, you mentioned that the bond market collapsing, the market in U.S. Treasury specifically, that's the death knell for the U.S. dollar. Do you think that could be the trigger point right there? That as soon as we start...
Well, who knows? As I said, this is a powder keg, and I don't know what's going to ignite it. But look, U.S. treasuries are going to collapse. We're going to lose our AAA status. I mean, I saw this idiot. It was a good interview on CNBC. I forget the guy's name. He was dead on. And some guy was jumping all over him because he was talking about that the U.S. Treasury was going to lose its AAA status. And he said, oh, that's crazy. That'll never happen. We're the greatest cover. And he said, we can never lose our status because we can always pay our money back because we can print it. We have a printing press. So there's no reason to think that we would ever lose our AAA status. So this guy thinks that We should be rated AAA because we have a printing press. Well, that's true of every government. Every sovereign government can print money. And so, if you know, what would be the point of a rating? Every government bond should be AAA. The Zimbabwe government bond should be AAA because they have a printing press, too. I mean, it's unbelievable, the stupidity of people out there.
The lunacy that's on TV at this point, it's just completely decoupled from reality. But, you know, I had one last question. You mentioned the program that Freddie and Fannie are instituting. What about the private programs that J.P. Morgan Chase?
Yeah, that's another thing. These guys are going to be preemptive, they said. They said they're going to start calling people who haven't even defaulted yet and start working with them to reduce their payments. So, look, everybody is going to want their loan modified. Nobody is going to want to be the sucker who is still paying a high mortgage. I mean, and the most unfortunate part about all this, how our economy is getting so distorted and destroyed. Capitalism doesn't work if you don't have the proper market-based incentives. You need risk and reward. You need fear and you need greed. People need to be held accountable for their decisions. And now we're rewarding all the wrong decisions. Let's take two people that live next door to each other. And they both bought a $200,000 house, let's say.
Right.
Let's say, and they both earned the same amount of money. Let's say one person acted responsibly, and as his home was appreciating, he didn't tap into it. He just went along his merry way and lived. Let's say his next-door neighbor, when his house appreciated, he decided to fix it up. So he refinanced, he borrowed a couple of $100,000, he put it in a swimming pool, he put it in a media room, he put it in a wine cellar, he did some landscaping, he decided to buy himself a new car, buy new appliances, take a vacation, buy a new wardrobe. He's done all this stuff. And now he's got this huge mortgage that he can barely afford. Now this guy is going to have his mortgage reduced so that he's paying the same or maybe even less than his neighbor, but his neighbor doesn't have any of this stuff.
Well, hell, let me give you an example. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. I stayed out of the housing market specifically because prices had gotten completely irrational, and now I feel like a sucker because, you know, I wish I were sitting on a mountain of dollar debt, and, you know, I could...
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. You like me, like, I sat out this real estate bubble and rented, and basically I should be being rewarded because I should be able to buy one of these houses in foreclosure that other people overpaid for. But now what's going to happen is the guy that was dumb enough to overpay for the house, he's just going to have that decision change. You say, you bought this house for $500,000? Don't worry. Now you only owe $200,000. But it's even worse. It's not even the people that, because people bought a house and when it appreciated, they borrowed the money. And now they don't have to pay that money back. And now they get all this stuff that they bought for nothing. And so the incentives are, you know, don't do the right thing. Just, you know, just the more money you owe, the worse shape you're in, the more help you're going to get. And if you do the right thing, you know, like this program that Fannie and Freddie have, you can only apply for loan modification if your mortgage exceeds 90% of the value of your house. So that means if you put a large down payment, if you put down 30 or 40%, right, and you're struggling to make your mortgage payments, tough. They're going to foreclose on you because there's equity there. But if you put nothing down, right, now they're going to do everything they can to keep you in your house. You know, which is what I was saying when I remember people were saying, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, oh, don't do a zero down mortgage, oh, it's risky. I told people, look, this is a housing bubble. Don't buy. But if you're going to buy, do it with no down payment because at least that way you don't have anything to lose. And it was the people who put down big down payments and who took in mortgages that they can afford, those are the people that are going to lose.
Yeah, well, the thing that kills me is in the middle of all this insanity, watching gold hit the skids, watching these incredible gold stocks come down in value. I mean, you know, it's nice to be able.
Yeah, you know, where's my bailout? I own a lot of gold stocks. How come no one's bailing me out?
Well,
so we feel bad for Peter because I'm confident that my gold stocks are going to come up on their own. So I don't need a bailout. But you know, every time an asset price goes down. But here's the interesting thing, right? The people who are in over their heads the most are the people that lied about their incomes in the first place. And these are the people who are now going to get the biggest reward. Let's assume I got qualified for a Fannie Mae loan because I lied about my income, and now my mortgage payment is 60 or 70% of what my income is because I lied about it, right? Now what's going to happen is I'm going to get it reduced. Now, it could very well be, too, that one of the reasons I was able to pay my mortgage is because I have a roommate, or I took out a couple of roommates who pay me in cash, and I don't report it as income, but I use that, and I'm going to get this massive reduction in my mortgage payment, because let's say I bought a house, I lied about my income, I'm really a minimum wage worker, I make about $20,000 a year, but I said I made $100,000 a year, and I bought this big house, and I have a huge mortgage payment, but the reason I'm able to make the payments is I have three or four boarders that are paying me. Well, now all of a sudden the government's going to say, oh, you know, you can keep that McMansion. You only earn $20,000 a year. Well, we're going to take your $4,000, $5,000 a month mortgage payment, and we're going to reduce your mortgage payment to $500 a month. Well, now look at this. Shoot, I can quit my job completely now. I don't even need to work at my minimum wage job. I'll just keep collecting rent from all my tenants. You know, I mean, this is a huge, huge moral hazard. This is probably the worst of all the things the government has done. But you know, I'm sure they're going to top this with something else because they keep topping themselves in stupidity.
You know what though, Peter? Do you really think this can hang together? Because you know, this is anecdotal, but you know, I live in the Bay Area. Some of the nicest neighborhoods out here, I am seeing for sale signs come up all over the place. Nothing's moving. Prices are coming down. So it doesn't feel like, you know, their efforts are having much of an effect.
Look, real estate prices have to collapse. They're going to go down. You know, I used to say it was going to be a 30% decline nationwide, 50% in the bubble markets. It's probably going to be more like 50% nationwide and 70 or 80% in the bubble markets like California, you know, Florida, Vegas, Phoenix, you know, New York. I mean, it's just going to be a complete disaster. Anyway, let me hop to the next call. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Peter.
Let's go to Jay from British Columbia.
Yes, hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call. Big fan of your work. Love your books.
Thanks.
I've been buying euros because I've been trading Forex, and it's been going up for some time, you know, since the beginning of the year, but for the past 4 or 5 months, it's been going down. Like you said, the U.S. dollar has been rallying. Now, my concern is that the euro is a fiat currency as well, and, you know, countries such as Germany and France are maybe tired of picking up the tab for the countries that are not doing as well. So is the euro just the best-looking horse in the glue factory in this case?
No, look, I don't think so. I think, look, they're all fiat currencies, which is one of the reasons that I like to buy assets in these countries and not simply have their bonds. As far as fiat currencies go, the U.S., I think, is in the most dire shape right now. And I think, even though I think all currency will lose value when you relate it to gold, I think all currencies will probably lose less value than the dollar. I think the dollar is in the worst shape. We are at the focal point of this financial crisis. And we are the world's biggest debtor. And this is a problem of us being broke. And this what we're living through right now, this is the beginning of the decoupling. This is the growing pains. This is the transition from a world that revolves around America to a world that basically is self-sufficient and America is left swinging in the wind. The world is going to stop subsidizing our economy. This is the best thing that can happen for the world. Believe me, after the pain of these losses are digested, we are going to witness the biggest economic boom in world history happening outside the United States and the biggest bust happening inside the United States. This is what's happening. We are setting up for this right now. The world is going to reclaim all their production, all their savings, all the resources. All this freedom around the world is finally going to be benefiting the people who deserved it, the people who worked hard, the people who sacrificed and produced. And America, we've been living off the productivity. We've been the parasite on the global economy. We're going to suffer dramatically. And unfortunately, based on what the governments are going to do in this country, they are going to make sure that this country is never able to turn the corner. The recession is going to get worse and worse. We shouldn't even call it a recession. The depression is just getting started. In fact, even the head of Merrill Lynch said this is going to be like, it's almost like the 1920s. He said we've had nothing like it since the depression. This is going to be a depression. We're in the depression now. It's just getting started. The main difference between a depression now and a depression that we had in the 30s is this is going to be an inflationary depression, which means it's going to be a lot worse.
Wow. Good thing I have euros instead of U.S. dollars.
Good thing. And Anyway, thanks for the call, Jay. Let me hop to Mike in Maryland.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
So I'm a junior in college, and I'll tell you, it continues to amaze me how oblivious college students are to the dollar crisis. I think most would rather be sleeping than pay attention to what's going on.
Well, it makes it hard to see it right now with the dollar going up.
Well, that's true. But if they just paid attention and watched some of your videos, they might get it. I know Ron Paul had a lot of supporters, and I'm one of them, but I just don't see enough change in the elected leadership to avoid the iceberg that's right in front of our nose. My question is this. Is there any financial advice you can give to people in my situation, you know, college students about to graduate in a few years, you know, in my case, less than 10,000 in assets? I just feel like we're going to be entering the job market with one.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would, you know, you have a small amount of money. I think, you know, I would buy, you know, gold and silver coins. You can't really go wrong with that. At least you can save some money. But as far as your career choice, I think that's where you have to be thinking about, where do you want to go? Where do you want to start a career? Where do you want to, you know, make your mark? And I think you really need to be looking abroad. I mean, I think that the opportunities in this country are going to be severely limited if the government continues along this path. And I think if you want to be able to take advantage of freer markets and more opportunities to advance yourself, you might want to be looking abroad, and you might want to be looking at, you know, learning a foreign language if you need to, or looking into a study program abroad, trying to get involved outside the United States, because I think that's where there's going to be a lot more opportunity.
Yeah, that's part of my other question. So even attending grad school, you would look maybe overseas to Asia?
I would try to get out of Dodge. You know, if you're young, you're starting out, it's very easy, you know.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Peter.
Thanks for the call. All right. The next caller is Jacob from Indiana.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. You mentioned earlier on the show that the people running this country have no clue what they're doing, and I completely agree with you on that. You know, our government's just completely out of whack and has been for years. My question for you is, I was wondering if you had any interest in running for Congress or for even maybe president in 2012.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, if I thought I could win, would I take a shot at it? Maybe. But you know, it's not something that I would seriously contemplate. I mean, I think it would be very difficult for somebody in my situation, in my background, to be able to get elected president. I mean, it'd be hard to just get elected for Congress. But you know, I wouldn't even do any good in Congress. I mean, look how long Ron Paul has been in Congress. It doesn't even matter. So even if I can get into Congress, what could I do? I wouldn't be able to get anything accomplished. So I think the only thing that I can accomplish is I can try to educate people as best I can through the media, through the internet, getting the truth out there. I can try the best I can to try to make sure as many Americans as I can don't go bankrupt, that protect their wealth and end up with something real when the dollar collapses, so that, you know, not every American is going to be broke. And you know, hopefully the truth gets out there. You know, I'm launching this video blog. I hope that went by for off. I'll start doing it maybe next week or the following week. But that's going to be getting out there, and I'm going to be recording these things, and I'll be commenting more frequently on the markets in this video blog, and maybe that'll get popular, and people will start listening to that. So the message is going to get out there. I mean, the internet is there. I know over 300,000 people have seen now that debate that I had with Art Laffer on CNBC. 300,000
yeah.
People, that's a lot of views. You know, I just sent out in that email some compilation that somebody put together of just some of my appearances from 06 and 07. It's pretty good because they got a lot of good stuff in there. Of course, there's a lot more stuff that's not in there. But if people can circulate those around, you know, get those out there, get more and more people to see, you know, that there is another opinion out there. You know, instead of just listening to the voices who, you know, got us into this mess. You know, all the people that I was debating on in television for years, the ones that said the economy was fantastic, it's the best it's ever been, they laughed at me, they called me names when I tried to point out that it was a disaster waiting to happen. I tried to point out that all this debt finance consumption was going to end badly, that we were borrowing all this money, and they were laughing at me. I didn't understand I don't know anything about economics. This is crazy. You know, all the people that were so completely and utterly wrong, these are the people who are now looking to solve the problems.
Yeah.
How can they solve a problem they didn't even know existed? They have no clue. They're trying to get the economy back to the way it was a couple of years ago, thinking that that was good. What they don't understand is the economy that they thought was great was the disaster. And And what they're trying to prevent right now is the market from bringing it back to a sounder basis. And they don't like that market process because it involves pain. But you know what? That's how it works. But they don't understand that. And so they're trying to save the patient, they're going to kill it. Right? They're trying to treat the acne. Meanwhile, we got cancer.
Yeah, I just
and while they're fussing with the zit cream, we're gonna die.
I think those videos, if the economy is doing bad in 2011 and 2012, I think your cache of videos on the internet would prove really valuable to a Peter Schiff candidacy. I think you running for office, especially for president in 2012, it would be the best way to educate the public. You know, look at Ron Paul's campaign with the money bombs and how it just spread the message. I think.
Yeah, I mean, that is one thing I thought about, was that if I had a run, that you know, even if I couldn't win, that there might be a lot of extra publicity, you know, in the fact that I was out there. I would get more media coverage, and my message would be better. Although what I would prefer is somebody that's a little bit more politically viable than me to come up and try to run with a message, and maybe I could be involved in the campaign in some way. And I would certainly, if we could get the right person elected president, I would certainly like to be involved in you know, dismantling the government, and the best way to do it now to reform the monetary system and our tax system. I'd like to be involved in that. That would be good. It's amazing. You know, you figure, why wouldn't I get a call from a guy like a Barack Obama? I mean, they're calling all sorts of people, all sorts of experts. Yet everyone that they're calling up was clueless about what was going on. The only person that has gone to Washington who predicted some of these problems was Mario Rubini. And apparently they have called him up asking for his advice. But you know why? Because Rubini is all wrong. Yes, Rubini did see the problems in the housing market and the debt. I'll give him that. He saw that. I mean, he didn't see it any clearer than I did. I mean, he was one of the other people besides me who understood this. But where he is completely all wet is Rubini thinks that the bailouts are good. He thinks the government needs to solve this problem. He thinks the government can solve it with programs and bailouts and printing money. That's where he's wrong. But I think that's why he's invited to Washington, and I'm not, because Washington likes his message. His message is we need bigger government. We need more government. See, my message is government caused the problem, and more government's not going to solve it. We borrowed and spent our way into this crisis. The only way out of it is to save and produce. We can't borrow and spend more. So, you know, nobody wants to bring somebody to Washington who has any common sense who's going to say, hey, we're the problem, and there is no solution that involves bigger government. The only solution, the only way that government can positively contribute to this problem is to shrink itself, is to drastically cut spending as fast as it can, to pull our troops home from all around the world, to slash government spending, to abolish departments, to cut entitlements, and to shrink the government. Because we are so broke as a nation, we can't afford this bloated government. And if the government was smaller, then it would be easier for us to dig our way out of this gigantic hole.
I hear you. I have another really quick question. You called out the tech bubble before that burst. You called out the housing bubble before that burst. Have you made any bold predictions that turned out to be wrong?
Well, I mean, obviously, the only thing that's really been wrong is I expected the dollar to be falling now and not rising. And so that's the only thing. In fact, even in Crash Proof, when I wrote about the stock market collapse I thought was coming in the U.S., I cautioned that I thought all the foreign stocks that we were recommending would also fall in sympathy with the U.S. market. And I thought the ones that would be hit the hardest would be the ones that were most dependent on U.S. exports, which is why we avoided those stocks. But I thought that even if these stocks went down, it would just be for the wrong reasons. It would be because the world misunderstood the relationship between the U.S. and the world, and they would be nervous that the collapse of our economy would be bad for their economies when, in fact, it would be good. But I did acknowledge that there'd be a transitionary period where people didn't know and that stocks would go down. But my thinking was that during that time period, based on what I was sure the U.S. government was going to do, the U.S. dollar would be losing value. Instead, the dollar has been gaining value, and that is not something that I forecast. I knew it was possible, but I didn't think it was likely. Instead, that's what happened. But, you know, this rise in the dollar is not going to last. I am convinced as I ever was that the dollar is going to collapse, and so I'm sure that that forecast is going to pan out. See, one of the things that happened is the dollar lost a lot of value between the time I wrote my book and a few months ago. It had an unprecedented, had a huge collapse. So the dollar had already declined dramatically by the time this whole thing started to fall apart. And so the dollar had this snapback rally. But I, as I said, when it really, really falls apart, then I think, these investment forecasts that I made are going to start to look very prescient again. And I know there's been some people on the Internet who have been trying to criticize me because they'll say, look, yeah, Schiff has been right on all these economic predictions, but his investment advice was bad. I don't think it was bad. I think right now, if my clients were to sell their stocks right now, a lot of them would lose money. That would be unfortunate. But I never gave short-term investment advice. I never told somebody, buy this stock and sell it next year and you're going to make money. Every one of my clients who invested with me, we told them, look, we're going to be in these stocks for 5 or 10 years. These are long-term investments. We're going to collect dividends on them. We need to be out of the dollar. We're not buying them because we think they're going to go up in the short run. We didn't care what they did in the short run. What we wanted to do was be out of the dollar and to have non-dollar income streams and to own real assets, not paper. And that's what we've done. And I think in the end, my investment forecasts are going to be completely vindicated.
Yep. Well, thank you so much for taking my call, Peter.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, I'm wondering if we ran out of callers. I forgot to ask for calls. Is anybody left on the line? Two more. Well, who's next? Andrew. Okay, Andrew from California. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, Peter. I'm a huge fan. You got to do your show more than once a week. But anyways, I'm finishing up with community college right now, and I'm just wondering if it makes sense to transfer to finish up the next 2 years at a four-year college, or if I should wait for prices to go down and prices of tuition.
I think tuitions are going to go down. I don't know how long the process is going to take. You know, one of the things that you could do is just take out a student loan and just not pay, which is what a lot of people are going to end up doing. So I think, we're going to have a lot of people not paying on their student loans. But it's tough for me to just tell you, hey, take out a loan and then don't pay it back. But I do think that a lot of people with a lot of big student loans are going to get these loans modified, just like people are having their mortgages modified. So personally, I wouldn't be concerned about taking on a lot of college debt, because I think one or two things are going to happen. Either the government is going to modify your loan dramatically, and even if they don't, inflation is going to be so high that your loan is going to be inflated away. The more important thing would be, what do you learn? Don't waste your time pursuing a liberal arts degree. If you're not going to go to college and learn something and prepare yourself for a career that's actually going to be valuable, then don't waste your time. But if you're looking at something in engineering, in geology, in computer science, in a real skill that you really need to go to school. But if you're just wasting your time, going to fraternity parties, taking an English class or, astronomy self-paced and all kinds of, stuff to get a liberal arts degree, there's no point, because it's not going to help you.
And one more question. When everybody figures out they need gold, will the purchasing power of gold dramatically increase?
Well, of course. Right now gold prices are very low because it's not really functioning as money right now. People are still placing their confidence in fiat currencies. And once they realize that, there is no confidence. Look, in the last week we've had dramatic reductions in interest rates all over the world. The Fed is down at 1%. The UK has got their rates at 3%. That's the lowest rate since 1945. The ECB cut, a number of banks cut. It seems like it's a natural consensus that within a year or so, everybody's going to be down below 1%, that the whole world is going to adopt the Japanese monetary policy of zero interest rates. Gold is going to go to the moon, absolutely to the moon. People are going to realize that governments are going to print and print and print, and that the paper is going to have no value. But even if all these currencies are wiped out, we know that the country that's in the worst shape is America, because our industry is gone. We are the country with the worst economy in the world because our economy is phony. We've got this giant service sector economy that can't exist unless the world supports it. No other country is like that. Because no other country has been issuing the world's reserve currency for 40 years. No other economy was able to evolve the way we did. And so when the whole thing falls apart, we collapse. It's a Frankenstein economy. It's an abomination, and we are in serious trouble. And Americans are going to see their standard of living destroyed relative to people in other countries. And U.S. assets, whatever they are, U.S. stocks, U.S. real estate, U.S. currency, is going to lose a considerable amount of value relative to similar assets all over the world.
Okay. Hey, one more question, actually. Are you an anarcho-capitalist, Murray Rothbard?
I don't know what that means, but yeah, I'm familiar with Murray Rothbard, and we think the same way. We're both Austrians.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Peter.
Thank you. Okay, the last caller of the day is Alex from Illinois.
Hey, Peter. I'm a huge fan. I'm honored being on the air with you. My question for you is about Canadian Royalty Trust. I know you're a big fan, so I've been doing quite a bit of research. I'm really attracted to the high yields that they pay. Now, the one thing that I've run into seemingly over and over again is that a lot of these companies seem to be not in the best of financial shape. Specifically, all of them have pretty unfavorable current ratios, and not all of them have the best earnings per share. And I was just wondering, you know, which Canroys are you looking at? Which ones are you holding yourself?
Yeah, I'm holding quite a few of them, and they all have gone down in price recently. And you know, some of them, not all of them, but some of them are trading for prices that are lower than they were, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when oil was in the teens. Now, of course, oil has come all the way back. It hit a new low today for this move. It's down, you know, about $56 a barrel. But, you know, look, these oil prices are not going to stay down here. I can't see any possible way. This is a panic liquidating price. This is like it was. You remember in the Asian economic crisis, in that crisis, that's when oil dropped from about $20, $24 a barrel down to $10 a barrel. You know, this is a similar situation, except, you know, 50 is the new 10. You know, this is the crash level. It's not going to stay down here, and I think we're going to go way, way up in commodities. So, look, if you want to know which of the stocks we like the best, just talk to any of the brokers. You know, we're buying a lot of them, and I have my favorites. I own so many of them personally. I think they're giving these things away. You know, I think they're very cheap. Part of it is because of the government's foolish move to tax these things, and that created a lot of selling pressure, and it's created a lot of uncertainty surrounding these assets, which has got them even cheaper. So, I think the smart thing to do is just pick them up, and yeah, you don't worry about the prices going down because they're not going to stay down. In the meantime, the dividends are great. And right now, you know what I would do with those dividends? I just reinvest them and buy more shares.
Sure. And are you buying your shares on TSX or the American ADRs?
Both, because there are some companies that I'm buying that I like to trade on the New York Stock Exchange, and there are many more that don't, and those we buy in Toronto.
Got you. Well, here's my other question. I definitely believe the dollar is totally overinflated. I mean, I totally buy what you're saying on
that. Speed it up. This is my last minute.
Sure. Okay, what's the best way to short the dollar? Would you recommend that?
Well, look, if you want to short the dollar, you can do it in futures markets. I think the best thing to do is just to own things that go up when the dollar goes down, own gold, own foreign assets, you know, just get out of the dollar, and that's a way of shorting it, except you don't assume any counterparty risk, and you don't use any margin or any leverage that could get you in trouble. But anyway, look, thanks for the call. I got to hop. Those of you coming to New Orleans, I will see you on Friday and Saturday morning. If not, maybe I'll see you up in San Francisco for the Hard Asset Conference. Remember to look out for that video blog that's coming. If you haven't got my new book yet, Little Book of Bull Moves and Bear Markets, make sure to pick it up. It is still the number one selling investment book on Amazon. Crash Proof is the number two best-selling investment book on Amazon. I've got one and two. That's pretty good. And if you don't have an account, or if you have an account, you haven't added to it yet, by all means, do it ASAP. Call up the brokers, 800-727-7922, and get rid of your dollars before they lose their value. Anyway, thanks a lot, everybody. I'll be back again next week for another live episode of Wall Street Unspun.